due to
good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You've got Anthony with Update. So, thanks for coming in again. Episode 2. So, thanks for coming back. Thank you for coming back to listen to another show of All Things Technology. So, I got a few things for you today. I'm going to be giving some purchasing advice. So, that's going to be fun. Anthony Blomfield, Update. So, thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. Another great show on All Things Technology. You've got the master, Anthony Blomfield, of Talking Technology, answering your questions and giving advice on how to get the best out of your technology and feel updated so you don't feel left behind with all these crazy things that are going on in the world and the technology world. So, yes, again, thank you so much for coming. This is my second show. The first show is on the website now. So that's planetaudio.org.nz/update. Right, so yeah, so today's show is going to be, unfortunately, a little bit more about myself, so I hope that doesn't bore you too much, but basically just really warming into, we're going to be answering lots of questions and getting deep into technology subjects. Again, today it's just going to be a little bit about myself again and how technology's really helped me out, and that might inspire some of you to realise the power of what you have in that keyboard. So what we're going to be talking about is, some tricks of the trade, some inside secrets, and answering any of your hard questions on what's going wrong with your computer, all those things you don't know what's going on. If you don't want to call the help desk, you just simply email me, chat@update.chat, or you can go to my website, update.chat. And there's a capture form there and a live chat and a forum. So please, the contact details again is email chat@update.chat. And the website is simply update.chat. And also you can obviously go to the Planet Audio website, planetaudio.org.nz/update. And you'll be able to get all the podcasts after the show as well. So, yeah, so basically this is obviously a new show that to myself and to this channel, which is, bringing technology and making it useful. And I'm really going to get quite in-depth into technology. I'm not going to try to water it down and make it all easy. I'm going to make it so you really understand it. And also I'm going to make it relevant to New Zealand and to you. This isn't just simply a copy and paste of tech headlines. It's going to be from someone who's been in the ditches, working in IT, and understand all the the real stress involved, and also I'm very aware of all the myths and lies, unfortunately, and a lot of people do get sold lemons and then wonder if it's them that doesn't know what how to use the product. So, yeah, so it's been, you know, it's been really good to have everybody coming in. And what we're going to do to start with is we're just going to give you a little bit of the tech news. So beware for that. Just before we do that, again, email me update@update.chat, or you can simply go to update.chat website and put your tech questions. I can answer them at the end of the show or next week. And also suggestions for particular subjects you want me to be going into. Okay, so now for the tech news. So hold fire, people. Yes, the technology news. Okay, so what is relevant to you people out there? We have lots of cool technology news today, but I think the most important thing, I believe, is SpaceX was able to successfully land their Falcon crew rocket spaceship, and that was with the astronauts Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley. Excuse me if I pronounce those wrong. That's just my limitation. And so we've got basically the first time a commercial space agency outside of the government has taken a crew to orbit and effectively land them safely. So that's a real marvel. And the splashdown was at 2:48 p.m. Eastern time, and that was in the off the coast of Florida, the Mexico Gulf, basically, and that was last Sunday, if you all missed it. So I think that's pretty incredible that SpaceX has managed to have effectively a vehicle for passaging people to this International Space Station. And so, yes, we all know sort of SpaceX is doing great things like trying to get to Mars and the moon and all the rest. But actually, the simple truth of just simply getting the astronauts to the space station was quite remarkable. And the great thing is, of course, is SpaceX has done it cheaper, more efficiently, and it just saves NASA all the worry of sort of the logistics. And the two astronauts, what I think is quite interesting is that the mission basically went perfect, which is somewhat a surprise, and they were interviewed. I'm sure most people probably did miss the interview with the two astronauts that landed. They were interviewed, and one, I think it was Doug, said he was surprised how well it went. He was actually expecting some errors, which brave people, I'd say. But so what happened, this is sort of Anthony's version, if you will, is after the astronauts spent a few weeks in the International Space Station doing their scientific tests. The SpaceX has a vehicle called the Dragon, the Crew Dragon specifically, and it's all automated. So a bit like their Tesla cars, the rocket effectively has a super autopilot where every single mathematical vector of movement is pre-programmed into the vehicle, and therefore it on a specific time the astronauts are in the vehicle, and it effectively, it's a, you know, precision clockwork, it detaches from the International Space Station, and of course every single movement is just perfect because of, you know, you can imagine when you're traveling at 27,000 kilometers an hour or something like that, you got to get things right. And so it detached, slowly moved away from the International Space Station, and then managed to effectively go around the world again into a sort of slightly lower orbit until it made a critical angle adjustment. And then, wow, this crazy rocket started burning through the atmosphere, 27, about 20,000 kilometers an hour. And the astronauts said it was just almost comfortable. They every single stage was perfect. So the first stage is it's going obviously a lot faster than the speed of sound, and it's hits the outer atmosphere, starts that plasma, we all, you know, that crazy plasma you all see. And then it got into thicker atmosphere and it releases sort of a number of parachutes, releases sort of a slowdown thing, and then it releases a, what's called a tethered parachute, which is pretty amazing. And there's like sort of explosions, and the astronauts could sort of feel every single time it sort of come down to a lower speed. And then it splashed into the water. It's sort of something like 12 miles an hour, so it even, you know, it does hit the water with a bit of a jolt. Yep, so isn't that amazing? I think that's pretty cool that SpaceX has done so well. Elon Musk has given the week off or some time off to his basically his staff because of such a success. Yeah, so that's sort of some good news. Staying on that theme, of course, is our great rocket lab, I'm going to call it ours, has, I don't know if people missed it, but they found what the fault was that caused their last satellite launch to fail. Peter Beck basically said it was a combination of factors to do with the circuitry under certain conditions having certain temperature gradients effectively created a short circuit because of the intense vibrations, the temperature changes, and of course when you're looking at tiny wires in a circuit board, even a few centigrades up or down from what it's designed for can cause a problem, and one little short, unfortunately, cause a problem. But apparently they're onto it, so good on Space Rocket Lab. And apparently their customers have not caused too much of a pain for Rocket Lab. They're going to effectively do the launch again. For those who might have seen it effectively self-destruct a few weeks ago, they've people might want to know, but apparently a lot of the satellites on board have a insurance policy, so you know, thank God for that, and they will probably hopefully be able to have a spare satellite, I guess, some of these companies, and won't be too long before they go into air again. So yeah, good old Space Rocket Lab, and yeah, they're always doing some great things. Yeah, now but more news, which of course we have the illustrious Mr. Trump, who now, don't know if people are aware, he's been trying to ban TikTok. For those of you who don't know what TikTok is, that's probably you should stay like that, I believe. But TikTok is sort of a short video social network, similar to YouTube, but just short. So you can't really do much with it except show you how to tie your laces or eat a croissant. But for some reason, it's been quite successful, and Donald Trump doesn't like that it's effectively Chinese-owned, and therefore he's trying to ban it, which has caused quite a stink. And he's now Microsoft has jumped in to basically start looking at buying TikTok. So, yep, starting to feel sorry for old Mr. Trump now. Yes, technology, it's you should go into it eyes open. And but now, of course, the latest is he's also banning WeChat, which is a massive communication tool from China. And the problem with these software apps is they effectively go, into other apps. So you pull out one and it can really ruin another one. For example, WeChat is also used in Spotify for certain things. It's used in games for people that play games and they use a communication tool. Often that's WeChat. So there's interlaced connectivity with these apps. So it could be a real custard salad if he basically manages to ban WeChat. Now there'll be all sorts of companies not being able to communicate with their customers. So yeah, if you did listen to my last podcast, I talked about how Apple's getting some pushback for its App Store. People are sick of Apple's sort of over-controlling, zealous attitude to its App Store and its huge margins. So Facebook has now just launched effectively a app for the App Store. But it's had to cut down all the features that it did on the Android store to meet Apple's criteria, and sort of Apple and now Microsoft are publicly saying, look, what are you doing, Apple? You know, we can't even run our apps on your platform anymore. So that could be something to watch. Apple's always been a little bit, they want to keep it in-house, which is, you know, part of their product platform. Yeah, so we've got, quite a few things going on. More local at home, of course. We've got New Zealand's really, there's a lot of talk about New Zealand becoming a tech hub. Won't go into the ins and outs, but effectively there's a lot of innovation still going on in New Zealand. A lot of small businesses are really embracing this work from home. This is sort of generalised, a lot of tech news all in sort of one paragraph for you. Also, New Zealand carries on innovating. What a great company they are. And they've just put a new navigation technology so that their aeroplanes can now navigate into Queenstown even on foggy, windy, stormy days. Don't quote me verbatim on that, but that's effectively the principle of their new navigation system there New Zealand's putting in, so that's great. Still innovating. It's called an RNP technology, if people like those acronyms. So that's sort of our tech news. If there's anything else, you can see it on my website, and other than that, I'll basically be letting you know if anything pops up on my desk that's really exciting. So, thanks again, and we're now going to get into the main topic for the day. So, it's update, guys. If you're just turning on your radio, 104.6 Planet FM, the coolest tech show on a Saturday morning, Anthony Blomfield. Hopefully some of you might recognise my voice from being on the help desk for a few years, answering many of your questions on why your modem doesn't work. Also, if you want to email any questions, it's simply email chat@update.chat. I'll try and answer those potentially today or next week. I got some questions already, so I have to answer. So it could be a bit of a list. I might sometimes, if the questions sort of following the same theme in my inbox, I'll just generically answer for them, if that's okay. The website is update.chat, and there's a forum there you can join, and you can follow along, and you can use the capture form to send me a message. So Anthony, update. So today, okay, guys, so this is my second show, and do appreciate you listening. I hope not to be too boring. Technology is actually quite exciting, so let's please, when you hear, you know, computer science, don't let your eyes glaze over. It's pretty radical, I believe, computer science, and it can get you out of a lot of sticky situations. So I think that's something to be aware of, that computers can really make your life easier. Now, excuse me. So basically with, and that's what I hope to do with this show, by the way, is too many people kind of don't enjoy using the computer. They just, oh God, I have to use it. It never works. It's always stressful. And that's a real shame, because the pioneers of the computer age, the whole point is these machines are supposed to make our lives easier. They're supposed to do things we don't want to do. They're supposed to do repetitive tasks easier for us. So if they're not doing that, then I always say, talk to that company that's sold you that piece of software and make them make it more user-friendly. And I really believe that. It's not the customer that should always be adapting to the software. It's a software that should be designed for the user. And people don't get into a car and have to work out all the different things just to put a safety belt on because the manufacturers have thought about it. So it's the same with a computer. It's up to the manufacturer to make that easy for you. So basically a little bit about myself, if that's okay. And that's because second show, and before we get sort of guests and really in-depth, it's good to know who I am. I had some quite fun in computers. Last time I told you basically a little bit of my help desk career. That's always fun. I then basically did quite a bit of good traveling. I went to contract for Apple, and they were a pretty wild company, very secretive for those who've worked for Apple. Hidden office, you're not allowed to tell them where you are. That's always interesting. Pure white walls, even when you get into reception, you don't know it's Apple. Super security, and Mr. Steve Jobs used to come in on this big sort of ominous room on a big PowerPoint presentation. You have to sit there quietly, sort of terrified of what he was saying. So good thing about working for Apple is they do all these companies, they give you really great internal training. So that's sort of something that really helped me out, which is, university's great, but nothing better than the actual company teaching you about their product. So that was nice. And obviously done different things, helped in the visual effects industry, setting up sort of rendering farms and so forth. And just speaking on that, I think New Zealand is still recognised as one of the superior countries when it comes to visual effects. And for those who don't know what visual effects is, that's where these great movies like Avatar and Lord of the Rings, all the monsters and explosions, of course, they're all made on a big supercomputer. And New Zealand is really at the forefront of that. We had workshops, of course, being recognised worldwide, and so I helped with that for a while. And also worked with a big publishing company in Sydney, which was quite fun. They used to publish all the men's magazines like FHM, so that was an interesting IT job. What I was wanted to basically tell everybody today is all the things that computers can help with and sort of so you can sort of feel a master, and I'll give you some anecdotal stories of how that's helped me. And so I think, if that's appropriate for today, there's nothing like, maximizing your investment in your laptop or your desktop and getting more usage out of it. Excuse me, just about to cough. So basically what I'm going to be doing is getting hard into giving you some tips on your devices or your technology, and really shortcut some of the myths and give you the juicy details on how to really be a pro. It starts with a few different things. So let's start with the assumption that, dare I say it, most people are using when they're sort of buying a computer, and that's that they either buy what's called a Microsoft Windows computer or an Apple. Now, what we have in the industry, certainly in New Zealand, let's be honest about this, is the Apples are expensive. It's the truth. And obviously, only Apple make the Apple operating system, so you can't get Apple operating system on another computer. But it's a very user-friendly, and it's fantastic for the kind of people that use it. Microsoft computers, obviously, because there's so many manufacturers, you can generally get a bargain, and let's not beat around the bush about that. The amount of hardware manufacturers making PC laptops is incredible, and the prices are just amazing, I believe. And therefore, a Windows laptop generally is a cheaper version for most people. So, this is an interesting thing because I don't want to be condescending, but let me tell you what I truly believe on where we're making a mistake as a country for our productivity and different things like that. So, first of all, the Apple people when they buy their Apple, they become masters of it pretty quickly because they've made that big investment. They know what they want, and they generally go on their merry way. The Windows one is sometimes a bit more of a hit and miss. And I think what we need to tell you how the sort of the IT world works and sort of some of why the stress when you buy a laptop and it doesn't work as well as you wanted and all these things is basically when you go to your work, obviously most people are using your Microsoft PC at work. And you never really think about the operating system. You just open your accounting software or something else and you do your work and you go home at 5. And it seems to be stable and it seems to do everything you want it to do and it seems to really not really cause a problem. And so you think, well, Windows is Windows and that's what I'll get at home. And the thing what we've got to realize is Microsoft Windows in a work environment is always supported by a group of hardworking IT people. And that's what you don't get by yourself. And that makes a big difference. And so in the Microsoft world, the operating system can become so customized that in your work environment, you may not really have a similar experience at all to when you get home on a personal laptop. So there's different versions of Microsoft Windows for corporations, for business, for professionals. And so generally in a work environment, they get the top of the line Enterprise Edition, has 100% security upgrades. It has all the plugins installed, all the licenses for different software, and therefore you just work at work, and then there's poor IT guys. Well, these days it's pretty streamlined. The administrators make sure that your computer is always working. And the way they do that, of course, is they invest in all these businesses, and this is what All New Zealand does, is the big, basically, server, data center, or a lot of big chunky servers. And that's basically running most businesses in New Zealand, a big Microsoft server. And, you know, this is the way we New Zealand basically runs. We obviously have these big, Windows servers doing all your email for your job, and then you got all your printing servers and your accounting packages. And the computer on your desk is pretty much just a glorified terminal. And so the stability and all that is really not just as much as the operating system as it is the quality of your IT team. Right. So now, why am I saying this? Why is this relevant? Well, it's relevant because many countries in the world are actually using a lot more open source technology to run a business. And it seems to be people we shy away from this more than we should. And so what I mean by that is just as if you have all these services that run your business that run on a sort of a Windows system, there's now often an open source solution. And we generally know that what we call that, most people in layman's terms, we call that Linux. And that's your sort of Red Hat or Open Directory services. And they basically can do just as good a job as Microsoft and sometimes with a lot less money, which is pretty good for a business, wouldn't you agree? Save some money. Now, so how does this work? So basically what we have is when you get your... when you personally get your laptop, if you are sort of wanting to become a little bit better in the whole computer world and feel a bit more confident. So here we go, guys. That's my mantra. I am telling people that please give Linux a go on your desktop. So what you can do now very easily is run your Microsoft system on your laptop or desktop alongside a glorious version of Linux as well. Now, why is this important? This is important because as a country, if we can adopt more open source solutions and you're familiar with it, then your IT department will be more confident to install open source infrastructure at the back end. And this really can start saving some big money. And the thing about open source from an IT department, sorry, IT guys, putting you in it here, is that it's customizable. So most open source software, the whole code can be open, deleted, changed, and edited. And that means with a quality IT team, they can create the services and packages and configuration which is perfect for your business. And one of the jobs I did in Australia was a company called Creative Folks. And what we did is process management. And this is where IT can be really useful in a business, and that's allowing all the things that you do in your company that's repeated to be automated on a computer. And effectively that might mean sort of, for example, we used to do the in the publishing industry, we'd always have to be clear-cutting images or downsizing JPEGs to a different resolution, or changing a JPEG to a GIF or something like that. And if you've got a staff member opening that in Photoshop, changing the resolution and saving it, and then emailing it to the editor, it could be a week's worth of work. So what we used to do is have an automated smart server, so that effectively all the JPEGs would just be dropped into a folder. That folder would know which ones needed to be downsized, changed the resolution, that'll be automatically renamed for the magazine, and they would then automatically pop up in the editor's folder on their desktop, ready to be used. And this sort of thing is this super fast increasing workflow. And open source allows a good IT team to really, really nail that. It allows it to not be hindered by effectively, you know, well, an off-the-shelf product. Let's say that Microsoft says, well, this is one size fits all. When open source, there is almost no limit to what a good IT company can do with an open source infrastructure. So that's a really unique thing. And so where it can start is if you personally, people, start trying a bit of your Linux on your laptop. Put it on your laptop, put it on your desktop. So let me talk a bit more about this. So I've said before how most people, you know, there's two schools of camp, which is you've got your Apple and you've got your Windows, and generally the Apple people generally have a pretty good time, but they have invested a lot for it. And let's be honest, Apple hardware, you know, it can be quite limited on the old USB options and certain ports. We all know that. So there is a really best of both worlds, and I really mean this. So what Apple operating system is, and the reason I believe many people like it, certainly why I like it, is the software is built on a very tried and true 1960s technology called Unix. Pretty sure it's 1960s. I can Google that, but let's go with that. It was invented the version of Linux that Apple used was effectively a Berkeley University. And it matured for sort of 20 years in the in those days, the mainframe systems for huge, big supercomputers. And Unix is basically a operating system, obviously, before we had these lovely GUIs, but it was designed to be very logical and very stable and very chronological. And what I mean by that is if you do a task in Unix and you want to do the same task again but a different part of Unix, it will be the same code and the same kind of syntax. So you're not always having to reinvent the square or have the spaghetti code of code for every new feature, because Unix is quite nice and clean, and it handles a lot of your permissions. So what happened basically about this, and I'm sure you'll enjoy this story, is back in 1990s, around about 1997, Apple were losing some pretty big market share. I'm pretty sure a lot of people would know that. And in fact, Steve Jobs had basically been fired, and Apple was losing market share massively. In fact, they'd just basically lost, losing the creative industry, which was they'd always been famous for. And the heads of Apple at the time, I think, no, I won't say the name, I think Scully, back in about 1996, 1997, said, look, let's ring Bill Gates and let's put Microsoft on these Apple computers because no one wants our Apple operating system anymore. And so Steve Jobs, you know, was had a nervous breakdown, and he was brought back into Apple to see if he could save the company in 97. I mean, it might be 96, but officially when he was brought back in, he wasn't officially on the team, so that's semantics. Anyway, he was brought back in, and what I always think is quite funny is the first thing he did was fire the board of Apple and said, no, we're not going to put Microsoft on these Apple computers. Instead, we're going to put a new operating system that we've secretly been working on, and Steve had been working on a new operating system with this sort of friends almost with another company called Next, and that was Unix, a new Unix operating system. And what basically Steve had done is taken the great stability of Unix that had run on these mainframes, the clean logic, stable, nothing sort of really crashed. And what Steve and their team had done is put a sort of a layer of graphical user interface on top of that, sort of a lovely, you know, what we're used to now, you know, your Windows, your mouse movement, all that. And he'd stuck that on top of a Unix sort of code base and created a pretty amazing operating system for the time, sort of about, you know, late 90s. And said to the board of directors, look, this is what Apple's going to do. We're actually going to not use Microsoft. We're going to use this tried and true Unix with our own GUI on it. We're going to call it Mac OS X. And, of course, that's really when Apple took off. I'll say that now. They started to take off, but, you know, they really went from strength to strength because, instantly, bang, they had a powerful computer that could do a lot and a lovely, you know, Apple's was famous for that lovely GUI. And so they put that on the top of that, and then they could sell this to the consumers and people had a great experience. So while Apple was going ahead and doing that great operating system, the rest of the computer world didn't just sort of not notice. And so people started to realize the power of sort of Unix, and that it really underpinned at that time a lot of your web hosting. So, because it was a sort of a mainframe language, all your web hosts back in the 90s, for a long time, or even now, use a Unix-based system to provide web pages. The famous one, it's the name for all the web server, by the way, it's called Apache. If you ever see that and wonder what it says, that's a web server. So, and that's a Unix tool, that's a Unix application or a program. So once Stephen made all these this great thing, other companies started going, oh, well, let's keep Unix running our servers and keep working on this. And Mr. Linus Torvald, I've pronounced that right, up in Sweden somewhere for a university project, thought, oh, well, I'm going to basically make a really beautiful version of Unix, and I'm going to call it Linux. And Linux, you get the word Linux, excuse me, from the idea of Unix with the first initial of his name. So, in fact, let me just make sure I pronounce his name correctly, give him due justice. Yeah. So he basically was a university graduate who at university wrote a new operating system, effectively modifying Unix and made it more sort of for your average computer rather than a big mainframe. And so Linux, yeah, the word Linux is literally sort of a truncation of Unix, and Linus Torvald, who invented it, and it's this is his first initial of his name. So there you go, isn't that interesting? So basically what happened with that is he gave it to his university and friends and said, look, I've started this operating system, but I don't want to sort of make, I don't want to sell it. Let's just let anyone here use it. And that was quite novel in a way at the time. But instead of sort of capitalizing it, Linus just said, well, Linus Torvalds, so let's pronounce it wrong, sorry about that. So he basically said, look, guys, just have some fun with my operating system. And in fact, it's built on standard computer science Unix, so why not just start adding to it? And that was the spawn of basically Linux. And that was quite some time ago. And since then, people from around the world, little people in basements for having, you know, eating pizza, improving the operating system. Once it's been improved, they basically upload it, and bang, it's constantly in a flux of being improved by almost an unlimited number of coders. Anyone who basically wants to register to help with it can do. So it's a pretty amazing concept that an operating system is really out there that anyone can add to. So that's the power now. So what's happened is effectively is many people didn't really know about Linux for a long time because, you know, it was a real geek thing. And then you had, you know, Microsoft, of course, they're a big corporate company. So they're selling their, you know, operating system. And Apple have got their Unix system called OS X going well. But, you know, we've got these sort of divergent sort of platforms, which is, you know, Apple, nice and clean, but it's expensive and it's, you know, it's very much for your graphic designer and your you know, your video editors. And then, so anyway, so why am I saying all this? Well, why I'm saying it, of course, is you can really have the best of both worlds, because a modern version of Linux now will perform brilliantly like Apple's OS X. It's the stability of Unix, and now they have their own GUI layers on top of Linux. So Linux is a strange world because you have the operating system and you have, you know, your desktop, which is sort of the graphical layer on top of your operating system. But yeah, people argue with that. But so Linux now will give you really a more premium version of the Apple operating system, with a user interface which is very customizable and also many, many options to choose from. You can really get a graphical user interface that you really feel comfortable with, a great stability underlying code, and a huge amount of features. So you'll be able to generally do most of the work you've been doing in your Windows. And here's the tip, guys, for all those people who sit on the fence and go, yeah, but I use this system, particular bit of software to run my electric fence or whatever, and it's made for only ever made for Windows, and it's made for DOS, and I can't run on anything else. Well, look, so since Intel really went to parallel processors, one of the secrets was that they now really allow you to run multiple operating systems simultaneously on your laptop efficiently. And, you know, people that tried it years ago, you know, many, many years ago, it wasn't very nice. But now you can run your Windows on top of your Linux operating system in what's called a virtual environment. And Linux has one free, which is called VirtualBox, and it's a free tool. And effectively, when you're running your operating system Linux, you run VirtualBox, and inside that is a little Windows environment. And if you really wanted to run a funny little Windows app that you've never been able to find a Linux version for, you can run that in your VirtualBox. But it's what's called sandbox, so that if it gets a virus or anything crashes, it doesn't cause a problem in the operating system. It runs very fast. So that's one. And then, of course, also, if that's not enough, you can now run layers of Windows code on top of your Linux, like a product called Wine, W-I-N-E, like the drink you drink. And that will allow you to run non-native Linux apps from Microsoft on your Linux computer. Yeah, guys. So basically, yeah. So that's I know, but pushing it pretty hard. You know, don't have too long to tell you all the great stuff. But effectively, what I'm trying to say to our great country, New Zealand, is please, let's see. We can improve our productivity. We can have a better experience if some of us start going, look, I'm going to give Linux a try. Always, some of the people probably have heard about it or thought about it, never really take biting the bullet. It means you can go out and get the latest whiz-bang Microsoft PC. And let's be honest, it's such a huge selection. So you can have the one with, you know, 10 USB ports if you want, and a big fan and a subwoofer built in. Unlike Apple, you know, so you can get that. And you can run a beautiful operating system that will make it, you know, all your Apple friends think, oh, wow, that's a flash operating system. Looks beautiful. And then you... you'll save on licenses, because it's open source. A lot of the software will be free for you. And then you'll start to move the country into a more productive computer science environment. Wouldn't that be good? So, yeah, to do that. You're already pushing time. But, yeah, so that's it. Now, obviously, you guys... will be going, what version of Linux? So yeah, I wouldn't even have time to go into that, but I definitely have to tell you the most common one for those who are really new is, of course, Ubuntu. So you can go to ubuntu.com, and that is still the most common for the average user of Linux. The good news is you can run a GUI on top of that that you prefer, which is you can run a what's called a Plasma desktop or a GNOME desktop or a Mate desktop. And that means kind of the look and feel can be whatever you prefer. You know, like lots of cool looking icons or lots of drag and drop buttons or really minimal. But you feel like you're the master for a change rather than the operating system telling you how it's going to behave. Okay. So, yeah, guys. So, that's sort of partly explaining what I have done a bit by letting you know what to do, because it's saved me a lot of money, a lot of time, and allowed me to do some cool things. And it's a great world to just keep getting into it. So that's so basically what we're going to do now, guys, is I'm going to answer some of the questions from last week, and stay tuned. So thank you very much. Right, guys, so we've got lots of different questions, but there's some unique ones that I sort of haven't seen before, which is quite interesting, and so I thought I'd answer those, you get a lot of the saying that it's pretty easy to Google some of the things on what to do, but some things that I thought was quite interesting is someone asked us, what's the difference between a vector drawing app and a pixel editing app like Photoshop? So, yeah, so you understood the question, people? So, interesting in the difference between a vector drawing app. That's kind of Adobe Illustrator for those who have used Adobe, or your pixel editing app, Photoshop. But actually, those are the sort of specific ones to the graphic design industry. But most people, obviously, in Windows would have Microsoft Paint. So that's a pixel editing app, you know, your beautiful Microsoft Paint where you draw a box and colour it in pink. And then you've got your vector drawing app, and that's sort of, probably a lot of you have had to use PowerPoint and draw in a couple of boxes and another square on top. There's lots of vector drawing apps. Sometimes people don't even know which one they're in, if they're in a pixel editing app or a vector drawing app. So let's sort of demystify that. And it sounds obvious now I say it, but before I started talking about this, you probably never really thought about it, and you probably didn't realise there was such a difference. So it's a bloody good question. And it's, I think it's really cool, because if I'm honest, my poor old father was in the graphic design industry, and when they're doing a lot of their work, you know, changing a file format from one format to another would always cause headaches, and sometimes it still does today, which is, you know, someone would send a particular, let's say, a Adobe Illustrator app, and someone would try and open it in Microsoft Word and vice versa, and someone would send a Photoshop and someone would try and open it in, I don't know, what's that tool called? Vectorly or something. So, all right, so let me, and this is the cool thing about the show, guys. You're going to understand the computer science fundamentals of these two apps so that you won't get bamboozled with all these whizzy-bang new apps that basically do the same thing. So, all right, let's start with your Pixel editing app and what that is and how it works and when you'll use it and when you don't, okay? So Pixel editing is kind of, from my knowledge, the first type of drawing app, if you will, in the computer world. And all it really is, you know, when they first created computers, really long time ago, in fact, even before this, just sending images through a TV set, which was, you know, I think even in the 30s, a spinning disc. All you do is you divide your screen up in a grid, and you go, you know, just like your battleships. The top is A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, O, J, K, L, M, P. And down the left-hand side is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right. And just like battleships, if you said, okay, C5, colour that pink. And he goes, okay, C5, and there's a pixel, and you paint that pink. And then you go, C8, and you colour that blue. And T9, colour that green. And over time, if you keep going through every single pixel and give it a value, obviously you're going to have a picture. Okay. So it's just a big, fat, ugly grid, just like your boring game called Battleships, where you go from one to the other, slowly filling in a image. Now, the thing is each pixel doesn't know anything about the next pixel next to it. So that's sort of your JPEGs, pixel, obviously, your TIFFs, your GIFs, your PNG files. All those are just pixels, like I say, a big grid, and the colours that go with it. Obviously, a little bit more science, but that's it. And then you've got, you know, that's obviously Adobe Photoshop's famous there, Microsoft Paint. And the annoying thing is once you've made a mistake, the best you can do is basically delete a whole lot of pixels. Right, the vector is a bit more exciting, because what vector is simply like what we did at high school maths, and we forgot about the lesson, where everyone adds a little bit of paper and you said, all right, we've got a line from on a y-x coordinate, and you say, okay, y-x coordinate starts at 1, y, x, y, 1, and it maybe follows a geometric shape of y equals x squared plus 4, and then you'd effectively draw a line, and that might look like a sort of a bell curve or whatever. Or, you know, it could just simply be a straight line, which is sort of, how did it work now? You go for y equals 2x or something, and that's just effectively multiplying the x value by 2, and therefore you have a vector. So vectors are mathematical formulas. That's what they are. And they are a mathematical formula when presented on a screen can turn into a picture. So just like when we all had our horrible calculators and you'd have those sort of wavy graphs and we thought they were cool, well, obviously a vector drawing app is just that on steroids. And so you can now, so all the mathematical equations on how to draw a square, how to draw a circle, you know, pi r squared, sine wave, curves, all the maths of geometry are built into the app. And then just the values get added. And what a vector app is, drawn by mathematics. And the clever thing about that is that they're infinitely editable. There's no loss. And you can apply advanced maths configuration to those vectors to create new amazing shapes. And that's where you get, you know, these amazing, like in Adobe Illustrator, you get these beautiful gradients and cross gradients. That's just all maths. So, that's the difference between those apps, guys, if that's okay. And basically, I actually got one here that's come through because time's pushing, because it's been such a great show, is can you play games on Linux? Well, yes, you certainly can, guys. Absolutely. Big game manufacturers, they do a lot of titles on your Linux platform. So that's no problem. And also, like I say, if you have a game that's not specifically made for Linux, you can run it in a emulator or what's called a Windows layer called Wine, or you can run it in a virtual window, or even better, you can use your Linux to do something great for a change, like start your own YouTube channel, become a DJ, become a computer scientist, send emails around the world, start your own server farm, and instead of using a computer just to sit and game all day, you can use it for what it was designed for in the beginning, to do something great. All right, so yeah, guys, so basically that's my show. So I'm going to be basically leaving you with one of my favourite tunes, and yeah, so like I say, next time you want to learn more, please come and obviously send those emails to chat@update.chat. And you've got update.chat is the website. And also, don't forget, people, you've got the planetaudio.org.nz/update. And, yeah, please send those questions through. You can go to the website. I'll be putting more information on questions on that website, update.chat. And, yeah, so hopefully you've learned something about, you know, go and try a bit of Linux. It will help the country save a lot of money. It will allow us to be a bit more creative in what we do with IT and, you know, make computers do what we want them to do, not the other way around. That's what it's all about. The computer's supposed to be our slave. We're not supposed to be the computer's slave. And I've seen too much of that from my experience. Okay, so again, Anthony Blomfield, you've got Update. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday and do something cool with technology.